from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Yul Kwan, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Exactly 1 year ago today, a former Army veteran, Wade Michael Page, went to a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, where he shot and killed six people before killing himself. The tragedy was the latest in a series of attacks against Sikhs following 9/11. The Oak Creek shooting was widely condemned as a hate crime and an act of domestic terrorism. And just last Friday, Attorney General Eric Holder announced that the Department of Justice would begin tracking hate crimes against Sikhs and several other groups. Here in the Bay Area, which is home to a vibrant Sikh community, efforts are underway to remember those who died and to ensure that their deaths were not in vain. To give us insight into these events, we're joined in the studio by Mandeep Singh Dhillon, a local San Jose resident and the co-founder of the Lagar Sikh Educational Foundation, which focuses on improving cross-cultural communication and supporting Sikhs living in the United States. We spoke with Mandeep last year about the shootings, and I'd like to welcome him back onto the program. Mandeep, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Yul.
Now, the last time you were on Forum, the shootings had just happened. What has been the response since then, both within the Sikh community and around the country, to those shootings?
Well, certainly there was a great amount of sadness because, you know, a sanctuary where our community members were gathering for prayer had been violated. But what we've been very pleased with are two things. One, as a community, we don't seek revenge, and so there was never really strong reaction for it. We're really more interested in justice. And we were very pleased, in addition to that, to the outpouring of support that we received from the community, both in Wisconsin and around the country, which also led to a great amount of press coverage and attention to the issues around gun violence and around hatred, but also particularly for our community.
Now, in the years since the shootings happened, what has the Sikh community done to try to prevent future attacks like this from happening again?
You know, I think what underlies a lot of these attacks are generally a sense of not knowing. People who see people who are different than them and don't really know how to react to them. There are a lot of other, attributes that make it more complicated, particularly in the case of Sikhs and the way we look. But what we really tried to focus on is around education and how do we make sure that the communities that we live in are aware of who we are, aware of what we stand for, understand that we're not a threat to anybody who's here. So education is a very big deal. And we're also spending a lot of effort to help our children through schools and make sure that the communities that they're in, those school communities where they're spending lots and lots of time with other people who may not have the right exposure to them, have the right tools and resources to help make that bridge more convenient.
Now, the decision by Attorney General Eric Holder to start tracking hate crimes against Sikhs was something that your community has been pushing for long before the shootings actually happened.
Yes.
And in fact, ever since 9/11, Sikhs have been the victims of many hate crimes and other types of aggression. Now, why do you think Sikhs are so frequently singled out for this type of discrimination?
I think, it's because of the way we look. And in throughout history, particularly when you take a look at the United States, which we call a melting pot but actually has a wide number of communities working together and coexisting looking different, in the post-9/11 world, we were very easy to paint as the other. Sikhs have a very visually distinct identity, and the United States has had a very difficult time. And I'd say other countries in the world don't want to just pick on this country, dating back to the Japanese and the wars, to try to figure out what does the other look like and how do we protect ourselves from the other. I think one of the real challenges that we've had as Sikhs is how do we overcome that? Because we do look different. We look different by design. It's actually an amazing irony because the reason we wear the turban, men and women who both wear the turban, the reason we do it is because we want to look distinct so people feel safe in our presence. When our religion was created, it was to help stem oppression that was coming from the governments against other religious communities. And so when our religious leaders gave us our identity, it was because he wanted us to be able to stand out. Mm-hmm. And it's just very ironic that post 9/11, that same distinct visual identity has caused challenges. And so we're hoping that now, with what's happened in the year since the Oak Creek tragedy and a lot more openness and awareness, people will begin to understand and relate better to the other that is like us and not fear us.
Mandeep, now, bearing in mind that our listeners can't actually see you, what are you referring to? Like, what are the visual markers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Sikhs wear turbans. It is a visually important identity for us. In an Eastern tradition, a turban is a crown. And so in 1699, one of the formalizations of our religion, which was founded in 1469 in India, was the distinct visual identity of wearing a turban. And men and women have a turban. And, you know, for us, it's a badge of pride, and it reminds us to do certain things. We also wear a silver bracelet, a steel bracelet on our wrist. Again, so if you see a Sikh, could be wearing a turban. Some cases may not be wearing a turban, depending on their own personal religious choices. Mm-hmm. But they'll often have a steel bracelet on their wrist. We're generally from the Indian subcontinent, although not exclusively. So oftentimes it'll be skin, darker skin, and then beards. So men, we don't shave our beards as well. So I have a mustache and a beard.
And what do the turbans and the beards represent for Sikh men?
I think that as I was saying earlier, it's that distinct visual identity, and it's that idea of a crown. And it historically goes back to the idea that only Muslim leaders and clerics could wear the turban at the time that Sikhism was founded. And part of our religious leaders' identity was to say that we believe in complete equality, equality of men and women, but also equality among all people. There is no caste system in our religion, and there's no distinction between a good Christian, a good Sikh, a good Hindu. A good Hindu. So I want to, you know, one of the turban, the ideas behind the turban was that our gurus told us that we will be equal with all others, right? So whatever, just so there was no distinction that somebody else looks different because they're better than you are.
Now, a lot of people who aren't familiar with Sikhism assume that it's a branch of Hinduism or even Islam. Yeah. But in fact, it's a completely different religion.
Yes.
For our listeners out there who might not know, can you describe the origins of Sikhism and some of its core tenets?
Yeah. No, thank you. It's a great opportunity for us. And we've had these opportunities a lot more in the last year where there's been a great deal of interest. Sikhism has its own faith tradition. It has its own historical derivation. And because it was created in 1469, it is one of the most modern religions in the world. And as a result of that, people confuse it with other religions that existed at the same time. And certainly that's true of, you know, you can even look at Judaism and Christianity. There's some faith traditions that are common. In Sikhism, Hinduism, and Islam, there are some common attributes, but there are a lot of distinctions. We'll focus on those. So one, Sikhism is a monotheistic religion, only believe in one God. That supreme God is responsible for all things. Mm-hmm. We believe in equality between all people. We don't believe in idol worship. As a result of that, some of these are key differentiators with other core religions. But the idea is that we believe in justice and equality. So we want to make sure that everybody feels in our presence that we're all equal. Another big part of our tradition is around seva, which is community service. So we want to make sure that we don't just live in our own world, that we are participating in the world around us. And even in the post-Oak Creek year, we've been really focusing a lot on making sure that we go out and participate in our community. So in addition to the visual identity, there's some very distinctive faith attributes for the Sikhs.
Now, one thing that I learned about Sikhism from talking with you earlier is that you don't believe in proselytizing.
Yes.
You don't try to go out and evangelize your religion.
That's correct.
And in some ways, I wonder, has that done a disservice to your community insofar as you haven't educated other people? So in light of the shootings now, do you feel that it's incumbent upon you and other leaders within your community to actually go out there and tell people what you're all about?
We're really bad at marketing, right? And so, and it's part of our core tenet, because we believe everybody is equal and that we don't want to make anybody else feel like we're superior and therefore trying to convert, we don't do a very good job of explaining ourselves. And, particularly because we're an immigrant community in this country, there are about 500,000 Sikhs in the United States. We're the fifth largest religion in the world. There are more Sikhs in the world than there are Jews. But we really don't do a very good job of going out. And so we're finding ourselves now really trying to make efforts to create resources that not seek conversion, but try to create awareness and understanding.
All right, I'm talking to Mandeep Singh Dhillon on the one-year anniversary of the shootings that left six people dead in a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Now, Mandeep, you mentioned that the Sikh community is an immigrant community.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little about their history here in the United States?
Yeah. So the Sikh religion was established in India, in the Indian subcontinent. And so the first Sikhs arrived in the United States in California, actually, in the late 1800s. And so they've been in this country for a very long time. And they emigrated here to take jobs primarily in forestry, and they built the railroads. There's some really interesting pictures of Sikhs back in the early pioneering days of this country. For a very long time, the population of Indians was heavily predominated by Sikhs. And up until the 1950s, they were, you know, census data is really poor, but there were probably about 5,000 Sikhs in the United States, and that represented about 70 to 80% of the actual Indian population in the United States. Mm-hmm. And as you're well aware, you know, certain of the laws relating to people who look like the others made it very difficult to have immigration for people to bring their families over. You know, there are some very interesting cases, though, of leadership even in our community early on. So the first Asian American elected Congress member was Dilip Singh Sandh, who was elected in California. And then even a case that's still going on now, the first Asian to be in the U.S. military, Bhagat Singh Thind, wore a turban in the U.S. military until the Supreme Court said that was, you know, maybe not going to be allowed anymore from a military perspective. And that's a case actually we're still continuing to fight today for those rights.
Now, you yourself have a pretty interesting background. You grew up as perhaps the only Sikh family in the South.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
So I grew up in a small town in rural North Carolina, and my parents moved there in 1975, and there were 7 billboards in the town that said, "The Ku Klux Klan welcomes you to Smithfield, North Carolina."
Oh,
and these billboards had a horse with a white Ku Klux Klan knight sitting on them. And that's where I grew up. And we maintained our distinct visual identity. My father was a physician, and he was welcomed in the community by the people who needed his services. And it really helped me understand more about, you know, what it was meant to be who I wanted to be. But you have to realize that Sikhs are like that all over the world. We actually are visually distinct, and, you know, the Prime Minister of India is a Sikh, but Sikhs make up less than 2% of India's population. So our U.S. experiences mimic actually the same experiences we have all over the world, where we're very few places that we have a majority. But it gave me kind of strength and an opportunity to go participate, and I knew that there weren't people like me around, so I had to become really good at doing whatever I do.
Now, did you ever personally face any kind of discrimination, either growing up in North Carolina or even after you moved out here to the Bay Area?
You know, I think discrimination is one of those things where, you know, when I was growing up, whenever I would fly somewhere, I had a pretty good idea that, you know, at least one of the 2 people sitting next to me on the airplane had no idea who I was. Mm-hmm. Because the U.S. system of education doesn't teach really about different types of communities, and particularly about ours, because it's so small in absolute numbers. Although, like I said, it is a significant global religion. But I think most recently we've had more circumstances, particularly around TSA screenings, that has made it very difficult for us. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a JD and an MBA. I practice law. I'm a member of the bar. And to go to an airport and feel like, you know, I'm somehow a threat.
Yeah, you must be really popular.
Well, there. Exactly. I'm really popular at the airport. Nobody wants to get behind me in line, right? Because they know that it's going to take longer to get through. And the problem isn't how it makes me feel. It's how it makes other people feel. It makes me look like somebody they should be worried about. And that's the thing that bothers us more than anything else, because, you know, pre-9/11, we really didn't have any problems other than the fact that we looked different. And now, because of certain types of screening behavior, it actually makes us feel a lot more singled out, mm-hmm. Which has its own, you know, negative impacts, psychological, personally, as well as on the people around us in line.
All right. Well, let's bring in some of our callers here. So we're going to San Francisco, and we have Jonathan on the line. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
All right. First off, to our guest, Satsri Akal, to you, good sir.
Satsri Akal. Thank you, Jonathan.
Yes. I first thought it was important to recognize how the narrative of mistaken identity has formed, and I just find it quite sad that, you know, we believe that a man could plot such ridiculous acts of murder, but he couldn't tell the difference between a Muslim and a Sikh. I think that's really a failure of our news media, and I would just point you to the work of Amardeep Kaleka, the son of the slain president, working with hundreds of military whistleblowers, acknowledging free energy technology on the planet. I believe that this narrative is, you know, quite hijacked, and that the reason why the man was killed was obviously that multiple witnesses say that there were multiple shooters is because there were. So I would just encourage, you know, you guys in KQED to follow the work of Amardeep Kaleka, the son of the Sikh temple, the Gurdwara president, and his new movie, which is called Sirius, Neverending Light.
All right, Jonathan, thank you for your call. Mandeep, I think there's some context here that might be helpful for our listeners to hear.
Yeah, so I think the in the aftermath of the shooting that happened at the Gurdwara, which again was a tragic event, and I think what's tragic about it isn't just that it happened to our community in a Gurdwara, it's that it could happen in any religious place. These are people who were peaceful, you know, God-fearing, and had come together to share worship, and to have that sanctity violated really is a major affront. And I do want to thank, you know, both Jonathan and other people who have brought attention to the idea that, you know, this shouldn't have happened in the first place, and the outpouring of support that our community had afterwards. Now, the mistaken identity piece of it is an entirely different issue. And, you know, like I said, we would never have wanted this to happen in a church, a synagogue, a mandir, or a mosque. And the fact that it happened in the Gurdwara, our community is perfectly, you know, because we believe in justice and we want, you know, the right thing to happen, we'll take up the mantle. But we hope everyone works together, particularly to reach across and you know, whether it's through the healing of further information or through the healing of moving forward, we hope that the communities have a chance to do that together. And our community in particular post this has spent a lot of time on seva, right, which is our version of service, and it's a requirement for all Sikhs to participate in. Yesterday there was a National Day of Seva that was taken on by our community in San Francisco. They came together to feed the homeless just in remembrance of those who lost their lives in Wisconsin, with the hope that we can move forward to a greater understanding.
All right. A listener writes in with an interesting question. He says, I've heard that Sikh men carry a knife as part of their uniform, like their turban or mustache and beard. Can you explain that, given Sikh's goal to create a feeling of safety and nonviolence?
Yes. The difference with it's an excellent question, and it is one of our five required symbols, right? And we believe in uncut hair. We have a knife that's called a kirpan, and it is an article of faith. And it's an article of faith primarily to remind the person carrying it about our duty. And our duty is to protect those around us. We have a very strong sworn responsibility to not allow anybody to suffer in our presence. And it's not about violence. It's about defense. And so we're actually never allowed to take out the kirpan in anger or aggression. Mm-hmm. It's actually only intended for defense. And so, you know, it is a very interestingly misunderstood article of faith because people feel like, you know, if somebody has a knife, they should feel unsafe. If a Sikh has a kirpan, you should feel safer because if they're following their oath, which we hope all Sikhs do, then that is intended specifically for the defense of those around them.
All right. Let's take another call from Jeff in San Jose. You're online. What's your call for Mandeep?
Hi. Your speaker seems to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to justify things that we don't have to justify here. Other people don't. In other words, practices that are outmoded. In other words, if we cause problems by the way we dress, we change the way we dress. We don't dress the same way. I believe that your speaker is knowledgeably self-indulging ethnocentrism. That's all this is. Wearing the turban is used to get attention and to discriminate between who follows the rules and who doesn't. And it's very dangerous.
All right, Jeff, well, thank you for your call. Indeed, how do you respond to that?
So certainly I think the idea that this country believes that everyone should be able to follow their faith, I think, is we believe that should be unassailed. And, you know, it didn't really matter if I cut my hair. You know, at the end of the day, I'm going to look different than everybody else does. And whether or not I choose to wear a beard, I'm going to look different than everyone else does. And I'm taller than some people and I'm shorter than others. So the idea that we could all look the same in order to not stand out is an actual impossibility. So if I choose to wear a turban as an article of my faith and I choose to follow my gurus just like I would hope that other people would choose to follow their own beliefs, I don't believe it is self-indulgent ethnocentrism, right? I do believe it more as kind of my right to go believe the things that I want to believe. So, you know, I don't do it to make other people feel awkward. I don't do it to get attention. I do it because it reflects who I am on the inside and it's the way I look on the outside.
All right. We have two more questions that came in through email. Let me read them both to you at the same time. Mm-hmm. A listener writes, could you talk a little bit about the death of Indira Gandhi, how that event came about and what it means to Sikhs? Another listener writes, I'm curious about Sikh women wearing turbans, which I have never seen in India, but have seen in the United States.
Yeah. The two separate questions. So in 1980, so it was interesting as a Sikh kid growing up in the United States in the 1970s and 1980s, the political situation in India took over a lot of our lives in the early 1980s, and there was a movement for more autonomy within the Sikh community in northern India that turned very political. And in June of 1984, the Indian government simultaneously attacked hundreds of gurdwaras across the nation. You know, similar to the Oak Creek tragedy, people who were worshiping in our gurdwaras were attacked by the government of India, which at the time was under the rule of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. And so you can imagine, just as we felt the sense of violation here very recently, we find a much greater sense of violation because it was our own government, the government of India, that made those orders to come. And it was politically motivated. There's a lot of context that we don't need to go into, but ultimately there was a simultaneous attack on the Golden Temple. And many months later, two bodyguards of Indira Gandhi, who happened to also be Sikh, took it upon themselves, not as part of a coordinated effort, to take their personal they wanted justice, and what we're finding now, many years after what happened there, is that there is no justice in India, and what happened either before, during the attacks, and after Indira Gandhi's assassination, many of those people have not come to justice. So certainly it's regrettable when somebody's life is taken, just like Indira Gandhi's life was taken. I think it's regrettable, but if you understood the context of what she did and the emotion within the people who felt the need to go and take the actions that they did, we believe that we were violated, and in many ways what happened after to Indira Gandhi, and then even to the Sikhs for many, many years afterwards, it's all regrettable. But I can't say more than that.
Interestingly enough, Sikhs now occupy very prominent positions within government, including the prime ministership.
That is correct. And so the healing and the moving forward has also happened. And so while certainly we're very disappointed that the people who, in the aftermath of Indira Gandhi's assassination, there was a pogrom in India. I mean, Sikhs were taken out of their homes and killed, and the government did nothing for weeks. None of those people have been brought to justice. And certainly, regrettable that Indira Gandhi's life was taken. But even more regrettable is how the government of India, the government that the Sikh community, kind of stood behind, did nothing to protect them. And in many cases, were actively participating in what happened. It's been a very difficult part of our history. And we're moving forward. We don't forget. But we do hope that the healing will continue, and we can, kind of as a nation, as a group of people, economically and politically, socially, move forward together, because that's what we do.
And what about the second question? Why don't we see Sikh women in the United States wearing turbans?
There are actually a lot of Sikh women in the United States who wear turbans, and there are a lot of Sikh women in India who wear turbans. It is not it doesn't have the same cultural, in reinforcement as it does for men, I think. But there's no difference in those women who choose to wear turbans and the men who choose to wear turbans. I think there's a more culturally reinforced expectation that the men wear turbans. But certainly we see more and more Sikh women in the United States wearing turbans. And there are many, many, many Sikh women in India who wear turbans as well.
All right. We have time for one more question from callers. So let's go to San Mateo. Ali, thanks for joining Forum. You have a question for Mandeep.
Yes, good morning. My comment is that we have to study more about this sect or this religion. Unlike the gentleman is stating there, these people are revengeful. They are the people for killing Indira Gandhi, blowing the airline. Last week in London, four of them were convicted of slashing the throat of a retired general, Indian general. And there is no equality between men and women, because there is a big fight for the money going in all their temples, simply because they don't want to choose a woman to lead. None of their leaders are women, and they don't have that much respect for women in that religion. What I think we should do is to bring, before bringing any of these gentlemen for their comments in support of their faith or their religion or whatever, we should study more about them.
All right. Well, thank you, Ali. Indeed.
I think that every community, every religion in the world has good people and bad people. No one has a monopoly on them. And if you take an even distribution of people across the world and across faiths, you'll find that some people are better than others. If I can only refer to what my code is and how we try to live that code, and by all means, I won't call myself perfect, nor will I say that everyone in our community is. But, there are people who have felt like they have been wronged and they've taken actions upon themselves. Do we as a community seek revenge? Absolutely not. And I don't think anybody can point to doctrine that reinforces that. And if that was true, there'd be a lot more revenge out there than there is today. We believe in seva. We believe in community service. We believe in justice and equality. Now, is equality practiced equally every day in every circumstance? Well, that's a human failing. It's not a doctrinal failing, right? When you take a look at the history of our religion, we were one of the first major religions to clearly distinguish that there is no difference between men and women, and there is no difference between people of different faiths. And so I think what the caller is pointing to are certain failures in human capabilities that certainly happen. Everyone has greed. Everyone has lust. Everyone has, all kinds of other avarice and issues. Our community is not free of those, but religion and the way our religion is designed is to help us overcome those things. So we hope for the day that everyone feels that we are living up to our code, but we do individually, personally, every day try to make that happen.
Mandeep, while you're here, I was hoping to ask you a question to clarify something for me. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard various people and even news outlets pronounce Sikhs as Sikhs.
Right.
And once and for all, what's the correct pronunciation and why is there so much confusion around this?
It's a great question. It is Sikh. And it's Sikh with a harder sounding H at the end of it. It's a K and an H. It's S-I-K-H. And I think if you look at the Gurmukhi, which is our language, it is spelt the way it would sound to be Sikh. We can talk about dozens of reasons why it happened, but the British occupied India for a very long time. And because of accent reasons, it may have sounded more like Sikh. And many times people have gone with Sikh because doesn't sound like you're not well, right? Which is in some ways, unfortunately, what Sikh sounds
taking
like.
Sick day today.
Yeah, sick day, right? But it is Sikh. And I appreciate you asking the question as whether other news media is because they're trying to create this understanding. I am a Sikh American.
All right, last question. Now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, today is the one-year anniversary of the Wisconsin shootings. What events have been planned here in the Bay Area to remember the victims?
Yesterday, there was a tremendous outpouring for a Sikh Seva Day. And like I said, there's a national day across the country. In every Gurdwara, they are remembering. Yesterday, there was a letter writing campaign and card sending campaign to express kind of support for the families of the Wisconsin community. But we're moving forward every day by creating, more extensions within our community to the communities around us. And these types of activities like we're having today hopefully help move people beyond where we are today.
All right, Mandeep, we're going to have to wrap up, but thanks so much for coming on the program. Mm-hmm. Mandeep Singh Dhillon is the co-founder of the Lagar Sikh Educational Foundation and the co-executive producer of the documentary The Sikh Next Door. I'm Yul Kwan, in today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.